Joint Chiefs of Staff Operations Officer, assisted the National Security Team with the campaign plan for the Global War on Terrorism. He authored the first theater nuclear war plan and served as the vice commander of America's largest airborne intelligence wing. Colonel Rob Manis is a true American hero. This is Rob Manis Live.
Tehran over. And if it isn't, who will decide when it is?
I think it accomplished a great deal, but it's not over because there's still nuclear material, enriched uranium that has to be taken out of Iran. There's still enrichment sites that have to be dismantled. There are still proxies that Iran supports. There are ballistic missiles that they still want to produce. Now, we've degraded a lot of it, but all of that is still there, and there's work to be done.
How do you envision the highly enriched uranium will be removed from Iran?
You go in and you take it out.
With what? Special forces from Israel? Special forces from the United States?
Well, I'm not going to talk about military means, but what President Trump has said to me, I want to go in there. And I think it can be done physically. That's not the problem. If you have an agreement and you go in and you take it out, why not? That's the best way.
What if there isn't an agreement? Can it be taken out by force?
Well, you're going to ask me these questions. I'm going to dodge them because I'm not going to talk about our military possibilities, plans, or anything of the kind.
And I'm just trying to get at how long is it going to take to achieve that aim?
I'm not going to give a timetable to it, but I'm going to say that's a terrifically important move.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show, folks. It's More War Monday, and we're live on Worldview Tube and X-Space's simulcast. Well, that video hits the nail right on the head. For the United States and Israel, it's all about the nukes. Iran continues its much dangerous march towards a nuclear weapons capability regardless, and it threatens our closest ally in the Middle East and global stability. That's what this war is all about. You know, the world's holding its breath. The decisions made in the coming days will reshape not just the region, but the globe. At the same time, we're monitoring the latest responses from the president and Tehran as diplomatic talks or threats continue to unfold. And over in Europe, the war in Ukraine is grinding on. But there are fresh reports suggesting Russia might be open to coming to peace once again. Of course, we've heard this before. Is it genuine or is it just another tactical move by Vladimir Putin? Who knows? Uncertainty and risk are par for the course in warfare. Our upcoming clips are going to show that. You'll hear it admitted by a national leader, one of the two national leaders of this conflict with Iran. And to help us unpack all of this and provide sharp analysis, we're joined once again by a longtime TV news producer, former diplomat, and current host at WABC Radio in New York, Jake Novak. Jake, welcome back to the Rob Manis Show.
Thanks for having me. Great way to start the week.
Yeah. Well, more War Monday. Yeah. Unfortunately, we still have to have it. Maybe someday we'll call it Peace Through Strength Monday someday. I'll have to come up with a catchy phrase that starts with an M. You know, I think that's the first time. That was 60 Minutes, I believe, this past Sunday. That's the first time one of the two national leaders has been very frank in a way, in this way, about the nuclear material in a setting that is like natural and not in a press conference or you know, yelling above a helicopter, the noise of a helicopter or something like that. Prime Minister Netanyahu, he's exactly where I think President Trump is. President Trump hasn't stated it that openly, but he's telegraphed this the whole time for several weeks now, that we need to get the nuclear material. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
Yeah, and the thing that really struck me from the clip you just played, and of course I watched the interview as well, is this media obsession with some kind of timeline. You know, Colonel, imagine if Franklin Delano Roosevelt had pressure going into the presidential election of 1944, November of 44, to wrap things up by then. The Battle of the Bulge happened after the election. We would have been in a really bad place for another 100 years if that had been, oh, let's just stop because we got some kind of stopwatch here. That's not how wars work. And especially not with when we're fighting a country that has at least half their leadership willing to not only die. We're not really doing justice to the scenario in Iran properly when we say they're willing to die, because that's not the whole story. They're willing to let everyone else in Iran die, too, before they give up. So this is asinine focus on timeline, especially, Colonel, and thank God we're not seeing significant casualties of any kind in this war, really. Not on our side and not among civilians. So what's the hurry? I mean, honestly, I understand, oh, we don't like gas prices. Well, you know, gas prices have been fluctuating, actually came down 4 days in a row. I know they're really high, but we've seen a lot worse than this. And, you know, you're going to allow the most evil nation in the world, which all it does is terrorism, to exist longer because you didn't want to pay higher gas prices for a couple more months? I mean, this obsession with the timeline is really unsettling, and it feels like an op. It feels like someone from the pro-Iran forces out there in the world, the pro-Chinese forces in the world, are feeding this timeline narrative to our news media and to the influencers, and that's why they're focused on it. Because everyone else in America, other than not loving the gas price, I don't think everyone else in America is like, come on, we got to finish this up. I don't think anyone is saying that, not normal people.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I want to dedicate part of the show to that issue, Jake. You know, I mean, it's been a myth. A narrative myth that I don't know what the root cause of it is, but the corporate media picked it up in the 1950s with the Korean War, and it's been ongoing ever since. I mean, we say today that the corporate media is primarily leftist because we can see it and hear it. In my opinion, that plays into the hands of the adversaries, the Iranians, the Chinese, because they all have these massive, I mean, people do not understand how massive their cyber and influence and propaganda operations are against the American people and people in the West every single day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it just does, in our country, it does our citizens a disservice when we're trying to end a war that's been going on against us for 47 plus years. And our ally, Israel, is in combined operations with us because they have we're the two nations that have the most vital national interests from the perspective of nations capable of doing this job. And it's a disservice to our citizens, both the everyday citizen and to the citizens that are serving in our uniform military.
Yeah. I mean, you know, imagine telling some of these people who have suffered at the hands of Iran over the years, or their children died in those IEDs that the Iranians paid for and planned. You know, we're on a timeline. We got to move on to something else. And it's great that you mentioned the Korean War because, you know, we saw this in World War II with Tokyo Rose and with Axis Sally, but that was pirate radio. Only our GIs heard it. They kind of got a kick out of it. But the Korean War, if you remember, was when we had POWs on the Korean side, the North Korean side, who they trotted out in front of newsreel cameras and said horrible things about the United States. And we saw that in Vietnam as well. So this reminds me of this. Granted, we don't have POWs, thank goodness, in this situation, but we've got these mouthpieces who are ready to go and disseminate falsehoods, anti-American type sentiment, and dress it up as if it's a serious concern. Well, you know, we got to get this war wrapped up. Yeah, no, we got to get the war accomplished, and we have to get our goals accomplished so that we don't have to do this again. Again, there's been an incredibly low number of actual casualties in this war, even on their side, let alone ours and let alone civilians. So what's the rush? The rush is people who want the United States to lose. That's what they're in rush for. And they have a huge foothold in our news media. They have a huge foothold in our entertainment media. And they have a huge foothold in Congress. There are members of Congress who have openly said they're rooting against the United States in this war. Chris Murphy, a U.S. senator from Connecticut. This isn't some kind of like rogue congressman from Berkeley. This is
crazy.
He's
a combat veteran. He's a combat, I think he's a Marine, right?
Absolutely insane. Yeah. And our enemies have figured out that the hatred of Donald Trump makes people stupid and, more importantly, makes them susceptible. It makes them vulnerable to all kinds of propaganda, bribery, arm twisting, all kinds of things like that. You know, it's exactly what people do, by the way, in corporate takeovers. They look for some investors who are upset. They look for people on the board who are upset, and they take a chance to, and they cultivate that division. That's what's going on here. I can see it from a mile away, and I know you can too. And I hope all the viewers start to see it, because that's what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, even Murphy's bad enough, but now you got Sedition 6 Senator Mark Kelly, who is a retired U.S. Navy 06, same level I was, combat aviator in the Navy, has experience in peace and war. And he's openly out there trying to say how bad off our inventories are using a classified briefing that he had. Well, why on earth would we ever let somebody like that ever back into a classified briefing when we're in the middle of a conflict, we're in a war, and you want to put that out on the table? Look, I get it if you're talking to Secretary Hegseth in a closed-door classified setting. But to do it publicly, like what's just been done the last 48 hours, it's incredibly wrong. And Secretary Hegseth was right to respond to it. But I think that there is a lot of foundation here to bring some of these guys up on charges, especially the retired guys. Again, Kelly's been made himself a target in that area before, but this is even worse than that.
He very much hates Donald Trump, and more importantly, hates the people who voted for Donald Trump. And hatred makes you stupid. As much as I disliked Barack Obama, I didn't really like his personality either. It wasn't really that personal for me, but I can't pretend I liked his personality. But I didn't like his politics. I didn't like his priorities. I didn't like his policies. I didn't go to sleep at night hating the guy. I didn't go to sleep at night thinking, what can I do to make the people who voted for him feel bad? I didn't care about that. I didn't think about that at all. Not a bit. These people do that. They're obsessed with hating Trump and his supporters so much so that their weakness, their vulnerability is extremely obvious to our enemies. Extremely. And I'd be surprised if it doesn't get much worse, because these folks are very, very, I mean, they're flashing a big red sign, come and use me to undermine your enemy, the United States of America. It's got nothing to do with blind patriotism. I agree with you. In a closed-door meeting, he could have let Hegseth have it. That would have been fine. Yeah. But this this is far beyond that. And these people are really, really dangerous. It's one of the reasons why we put people away if they're posting violent, incendiary comments online or something like that. Because, yeah, we have free speech, but if you say, hey, I want to kill this guy on a certain day in a certain place, which is what people are doing constantly with Donald Trump, by the way, that is a crime. And more importantly, these people are sick. I mean, I think Mark Kelly and Chris Murphy, I don't know if they need to be put away, but I think they're sick. I think they're having a mental illness issue. And I don't need to be a psychiatrist to see it, just like I don't need to be I don't need to be a doctor to know that someone coughing up blood probably has tuberculosis or an internal injury.
I'm beginning to think that the psychiatrist that wanted to put TDS into the manual describes the DSM might have been onto something. We got to take a break, Jake, when we come back. We'll see another clip. This time, the Iranians have answered. The president answered. I want to get your take on what's the reality of what we can expect, because I know what I think. I've been on your show talking about it in the last 24 hours, but I want to hear what you have to say about it. We'll be right back with Jake Novak.
What if millions around the world could access Bible teaching and worldview training for free right now without hitting a paywall? That's exactly what happens every day at worldviewtube.com because of the Worldview Weekend Foundation. We don't lock our live stream behind PayPal. We don't restrict our content to members only. Instead, the Worldview Weekend Foundation helps cover the cost of delivering free educational and ministry programming to people across the nation and around the world. And it's not just programming. My Sunday night church service, where I taught verse by verse through Revelation for 18 months, and now I am teaching through the Book of Daniel is made possible through the support of our church, Worldview Weekend Foundation. If you believe this kind of truth-centered biblical teaching must continue, donate today. Go now to worldviewfoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address and phone number there if you'd rather give by phone or mail. That's worldviewfoundation.com. Thank you.
But we do have some breaking news tonight being reported by the Wall Street Journal, citing people familiar with the response from Iran to the U.S. proposal. And here are some of the highlights. Iran is proposing an end to the fighting and a gradual reopening of the Strait of Hormuz. The U.S. must lift its blockade of Iranian ports, say the Iranians. Nuclear issues to be negotiated over the next 30 days, another stipulation. Also, Iran proposing to have some of its highly enriched uranium diluted, the rest transferred to a third country, and also Iran willing to suspend enrichment of uranium, but for a shorter period than the 20-year moratorium being proposed by the administration. And it'll be interesting to see what reaction will get to these points by the administration. But earlier today, Iran's military said that if the U.S. was thinking about restarting the war, they better think again.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's More War Monday. We're live on Worldview 2. My guest today is WABC radio host Jake Novak. Jake had the president's tweet in response up there. It's totally unacceptable, in all caps, and not surprised. Not sure where this 20-year moratorium thing's coming from. I think there's some wishful thinking on the diplomatic side, but we got to remove that. Their control over this enriched uranium and any ability to do it again and any ability to mate anything that looks like a nuclear weapon to a intercontinental ballistic missile and those kind of things. So there's a lot to look at here, but it's pretty simple. Unacceptable. I think the president should really restart hostilities and go full scale industrial until these people capitulate.
Yeah, I wish that. I remember when the president several weeks ago, maybe it was a couple of months ago, talked about total surrender. I'd really like him to use that terminology again. You talked about it with me on my program last night on the radio. There's no good faith negotiating with the Iranians. And where have I heard all this stuff before? How do I know this? Because the Iranians, of course, were the puppet masters behind Hamas. They're more than just the puppet masters. They're full partners with Hezbollah. And this is exactly the way Hamas and Hezbollah have been pretending to negotiate for a really long time. I see this every single time. Every single time there's a ceasefire with Hamas, Hamas spends the next 2 days continuing to fire, and then they do it. So that's exactly what happened, if you remember, with the Iranians. And then, you know, they have a rocket here, a rocket there, and they say, we couldn't control that. And that's what they've been doing. Iran has hit Kuwait and UAE yesterday. This is the same MO. I've seen this before. There is absolutely no honor with these people. There is no negotiation with these people. I think President Trump, as you said on my program last night, wanted to show the world that he was willing to give peace as much of a chance as possible. I think that he has done that. The people who hate him are never going to notice the realities of what he does or doesn't do anyway. So among that small number of people who maybe doesn't like him but aren't also deranged about him, that's a small number of people. I wish it were larger. I think that they probably figured this out, that he's tried this enough. And that's enough. This is it. I agree with you. I don't want to see more war, but when you consider how much bombing the United States and Israel has done on Iran so far and how few people have actually died, especially civilians, I don't feel as guilty. I don't feel like I'm a warmonger. I don't feel like anyone can honestly say I'm a bloodthirsty person by saying I want the number one sponsor of terrorism to be wiped out, period. Especially at this low human cost, because it's been a low human cost, folks. I'm sorry, a lot of people, I'm happy, a lot of people haven't died. That's the most important thing to me, not gas prices and not whether or not some people are going to get their fertilizer for a couple of weeks. I understand that that's a hardship, but honestly,
we're farmers in our family. Yeah. Our family that is farming our farm has no problems. All that stuff was bought long ago, long before all this. So this growing season has no, the fertilizer thing has no bearing, people. No bearing. It's a lie being pushed by who knows what, people wanting to gin stuff up. Right. It's a flat out lie. And that comes to you from the ground on a major farm.
Good for you.
You know, so yeah, I get it. So I just got to ask you, you're a former diplomat. I mean, what could our side's folks be thinking to continue to try to, because obviously they're influencing the president. He has a propensity to lean towards peace deals anyway. Yeah. So they're influencing him, but some people are out there saying it's making him look weak and it's making the United States look weak. I disagree with that. I think we actually look very strong because we're not stopping. If they're attacking us or committing war crimes, we're taking them out. You know?
Yeah.
But what is it? Why are they still doing it? And what could it possibly look like at all besides some other trumped up thing like the JCPOA was under Obama?
Well, I think that they're hoping that some members of the Iranian political power group who really are honest and really do want some change, however small a number they may be, might gain an upper hand from this. In other words, that they'll make the IRGC types, the real hardliners, look bad every day that we don't resume hostilities, because they can say, hey, you know, we could actually save your life if you're willing to step down, go to Tajikistan. By the way, all the IRGC folks, that's where they want to escape to. I wasn't sure why until I saw some pictures of the countryside there and some of the people. Okay, now I get it. But all right. Maybe that's what I think. I think that that's really what's going on here. The hope that that would happen. I think they always thought that that was kind of a long shot, but worth a try. Mm-hmm. Worth a try, just so that we could say that we did that, and to placate these isolationist types within the party, within the Republican Party, and to placate some folks out there who might actually be worth negotiating with. But the more that the criticism comes from the far left and the Chris Murphys and the Mark Kellys of the world, the more it's going to be obvious that it's no point in listening to them. I think it was worth a try, but the try, I think, is, I think that really even a week ago that this thing went stale, you know, about a week ago. And again, if we had higher casualties, then I would feel, I would be much quieter about saying, hey, I'm glad we didn't negotiate some kind of crazy deal. But since the casualty level has been really low so far, I don't have any guilt so far. I returning to what we were doing before with the kind of price we were paying for it and humanity was paying for it, which I think was really low. Yeah. I'm okay with it, Colonel. I think we should resume. I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, the big challenge is running out of targets, but we've given them several weeks now to reconstitute some of those targets. We should have some new targets. You know, all of the rumint is what we call it in the military business. Some people call it OSINT. But the rumint about the Chinese coming and finding an overland route through a third country, which is very reasonable. I would expect that they've been working on that and then bringing resupply into Iran that way. And then you mentioned yesterday the Russians have now used the Caspian Sea to do drone resupply, is what the reporting is. You know, if we don't cut all that stuff off, the whole blockade, which is really working very effectively from an oil perspective, and it's costing them over $500 million a day in oil revenues, which is good, which means they have trouble paying their people, their soldiers and their police, all the people that maintain control of the population. But we've got to cut all avenues of resupply off. And somehow, and the president talked about this again, get arms supplies to the resistance organizations and groups that we know are inside the country and some are probably outside the country waiting to go in, but there's been no way to arm them.
Yeah, I also think people need to understand that Iran is not Iraq and it sure as heck isn't Yemen or Syria. Iran has a very sophisticated infrastructure, a more nuanced economy. It's not just about oil, although, of course, it's mostly about that, but it's not just about that. And there are a lot of institutions there worth preserving. That's another reason why you might want to drag out a peace process in the hopes of not leveling a country that has a lot to offer once it's finally freed. I mean, gold reserves alone, I don't know if any ladies watching, Iranian gold is pretty high quality, and they do, and it's going to be a nice, you're going to be able to get some jewelry on sale, despite the high price of gold, when this thing ends, and a few other things as well. There are a lot of moving parts here, but at the end of the day, we have a radical group that still has enough control over the country. It's much reduced from where it was a couple months ago. But there's still a very radical group that has enough control over enough of the country to keep anything from really happening. And yeah, we're in a little bit of a pause point right now. And unless you're a director of a movie or playing a video game, there should be no reason for you to be impatient about a pause point here. You know, if you, you know, Americans are saying, well, they're, you know, we want to see this war end. People at CBS News, I want to see this war. You know, come on, let's get something going. You know, be quiet. There's people in Iran, actual people there who are suffering under this. If they're not going crazy and patient, then why are you? Let's see what plays out here. But, you know, that's another factor that we didn't talk about. There's so much of Iran. We would not like to see Iran become leveled like Syria or Gaza or parts of Lebanon. If we can help it, that would be really nice if we don't have to do that, because be a lot of great value. There'd be a lot of great value for a lot of people in the world, a lot of countries, a lot of businesses to get involved there and not have to do a rebuilding project. Nation building isn't so hard from the political standpoint, I don't think. It's that economic part. Geez, we don't want to have to rebuild Iran. That's a really big country. It's not like Gaza or even Syria. It's much bigger than them.
No, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, you know, the Iranian people that I've met, and I had a cousin that was saved. He was orphaned out in the deserts of Iran. And one of my uncles was working building oil fields over there many, many years in the 60s. And he found this boy and saved his life. He had no family and everything. So I've met, you know, I know Iranian people in our country because I grew up with him, and I've met. And even as late as campaigning for U.S. Senate, but a large populations of Iranians, and they're very well attuned to tech. They're very well attuned to manufacturing, and I would like to see that reawakened in the population of what's remaining, and maybe some of these folks that actually want to go home, that haven't permanently settled here. And revitalize the Iranian economy as a friendly nation to its neighbors and to the rest of the world. I mean, I just see endless possibilities of prosperity and peace and the Iranian people getting to once again be living in a world that they can be proud of, that where they're not worried about A, getting killed every day by their own government, or somebody else having to come in and bomb the heck out of them. We got to take another break, Jake. When we come back, I want to return back to that subject of the uncertainty of warfare is uncertain. You have to understand that as we're going through this process, and the decision's already been made that we're in it. So you have to understand that. We'll hear from Benjamin Netanyahu again about that. And remember, he's a soldier. I present this upcoming clip of Netanyahu as a soldier with combat experience. As you listen to him, we'll be right back with Jake Novak.
News is moving faster than ever, and so are we. Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage, and now, real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab, and here you can turn on and customize your notification experience for the Worldview Tube app. News doesn't wait, and neither should you. Turn on push notifications to stay informed. Every headline as it happens.
Is it possible, Mr. Prime Minister, that the war with Iran could end, but the war with Hezbollah could continue? that these would succeed, be separate and divergent battlefields?
They should be. What Iran would like to do is to say, no, you know, if we achieve a ceasefire here, we want a ceasefire
they
there.
Do, yeah. Clearly.
You know why? Because they want Hezbollah to stay there and continue to torture Lebanon, continue to hold its people hostage, and continue
Will you accept that?
No. No, we've said,
even if President Trump asks you to?
Well, look, he understands what I'm saying. I mean, we want to get rid of that danger to our communities, to our cities. They rocket our cities all the time. They rocket our communities. And of course, would you want to live like that?
So this could go on?
Yeah, but
even if Iran is solved?
I hope. Look, if this regime is indeed weakened or possibly toppled, I think it's the end of Hezbollah, it's the end of Hamas, it's probably the end of the Houthis, because the whole scaffolding of the terrorist proxy network that Iran built collapses if the regime in Iran collapses.
Do you believe it is possible to topple the Iranian regime?
I think that you can't predict when that happened. Is it possible? Yes. Is it guaranteed? No.
Risk and uncertainty. Mr. Netanyahu's clip there from his interview on 60 Minutes got my interest, because I know he's a soldier that's been in combat. His brother actually was a soldier that died in combat. He speaks with that experience. Not very many national leaders around the world have that direct experience in the West, anyway. My guest today is Jake Novak. And Jake, you know, when you listen to the prime minister talk about it, you hear the soldier coming out. You can't predict things in warfare. And when you try, he didn't say this, but I was thinking about it. And when you try to, it usually you get proved wrong and you get egg on your face every single time when you try to make a prediction when warfare is actually happening. The other thing that I wanted to point out in that clip is that, look, the proxies have to go. They are part of Iran. We must teach people in the West, even the Russians and the Chinese, that the proxies are part of the Iranian armed forces. That's what they are.
Yeah, and I've been saying for a long time, the other way around, because it works both ways. Iran and its proxies are two columns holding up the building. And if either one of those columns goes down, the building crumbles. When Hamas was just about to be completely wiped out not that long ago, I predicted that the Iranian regime would only have about a year left. I'm pretty much on time as far as that's concerned, because that's all the Iranian regime does. It doesn't really do anything else. It sponsors and plots with its proxy armies all over the world. That's what it does. And with those proxy armies defeated, or with the proxy armies like Hezbollah and the Houthis seeing that Hamas was allowed to be defeated and how they wouldn't last either, and Iran would cut them loose at some point, I really didn't think that the regime would last. And sure enough, they put themselves in this position. And of course, it goes the other way around if their source is knocked out. You talked about Netanyahu being a combat veteran. You know, he wasn't just a combat veteran in wars. He stormed the Sabena Airlines. This was a hijack incident in Israel in the early 70s, yeah. Mm-hmm. Took a shot in the shoulder. It was a pretty successful mission because they did end the hijacking threat, but some passengers were killed. His brother was involved in the raid in Entebbe and was the only Israeli soldier killed in that, much more successful operation. But they both fought in wars, and you're right. I mean, once you do that, you know that crazy things can happen. But the idea that, you know, again, you could see what Major Garrett was trying to get to, the interviewer, that 60 Minutes thing. Like, isn't Israel going to, like, go to the United States to keep going if it still has to fight Hezbollah? You know, aren't you guys, like, an impediment to peace or something like that? Mm. And it just shows incredible ignorance. There is no Hezbollah without Iran. And this is the point that a lot of people miss. There's no Iranian regime without Hezbollah. There's nothing for them to do. It's kind of like telling a prize fighter, well, we're still going to pay you, but you don't fight. And they don't know what to do with themselves. It's like the dilemma of the retired man. I mean, look what you've done. You've retired from active duty, but you've kept yourself busy to say the least. If you don't keep yourself busy with something, you know, you're like the shark that stops swimming. And people need to understand that Iran being taken care of, or that regime being toppled or new, means the end of Hezbollah. But Netanyahu was being a little polite there. It absolutely will mean the end of these proxies, because they won't be able to support them, and that's really, and they don't exist without Iranian support. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, I don't know if he was being polite as much as he recognizing that the reality that it's a tough nut to crack. You know, yeah. I mean, these proxies and the Iranian IRGC defense system they're tough nuts to crack. I mean, I've been saying this the whole time. You have too. You can't predict the outcome. We may want to see the regime completely collapse and topple, and we may see things being done like the blockade, the naval blockade the president decided to do that could further that, but you can't predict whether it's going to happen or not, no matter what we want. Well, we got a question in the audience. I want to go ahead and take that before we get to this next break. Go ahead. Allie is our host today over there.
Yes, sir. We have RC. RC, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to touch on the struggles we're having here in the United States, you know, to fill up my gas tank, to realize that those are first world problems, that what's happening over there in Iran is horrific. And we need just to have that sense here in America.
Yeah, it is a first world problem. I think most people that have common sense.
Did you have that way?
I'm assuming he didn't have a question. I see another hand up over there. Let's take a question.
Yes, sir. We have LA Chief. Go ahead, Chief.
Hey, Colonel. Yeah. So there's always blowback in these things. Let's say it goes our way with Iran. Who do you see rising up to be the regional power? Because it seems like there always needs to be an Arab or Muslim reasonable power as a counterbalance to Israel or the United States. Who do you think steps up into that role, if at all?
That's a great question, Jake. Who becomes the regional power?
Well, we know who wants to be. It's Turkey for the most part. Turkey is very much trying to fill that role. The problem is Erdogan doesn't have anywhere near as much control over his country like the mullahs did over Iran until just recently. That's one thing. Probably more like, and then you have another problem in that Saudi Arabia, which for a long time has been the leader of the Sunni world. For a long time, it was Egypt. You know, when we were all young people, we're all around the same age. Egypt was the most important Arab country by far for two reasons. It had the largest population and it had the largest military. Now the Saudis, who have neither much of a military or much of a population, are the most important Sunni Arab country, period, because they have the most money. Mm-hmm. But they don't have enough people, and they don't have a significant enough conventional army to really do all that on their own. But I do see Saudi Arabia consolidating its coalition as the head of the Arab world, with Egypt behind them even more so, if Iran steps aside. Turkey's dream of doing this is very difficult for them. First of all, they're not really an Arab country. They also just don't, they're geographically not as much in the region as much as the Saudis or the Egyptians are, or things like that. And they have a leader in Erdogan who I don't think is going to be a leader for that much longer. I don't see him still leading Turkey 10 years from now. The Saudi royal family, Mohammed bin Salman, I see him being the leader 30 years from now. The military leadership in Egypt, whether it's Sisi or someone else, I also see them continuing to be the leaders in Egypt at least 20 years from now. Erdogan, I don't think, has a 10-year expiration date going on his milk carton. And because of that, even though they have worked very hard, Chief, they have worked very hard, Turkey, especially in the influence game, to be the new power in the hopes of being the new power in the region. We're just finding out now that Turkey has been paying off a lot of these influencers, these folks on the internet, these folks on social media, these podcasters. It's Turkish money, along with Qatari money, which we've known for a long time. But now we know it's the Turks as well. So they've been trying really hard. The problem is there's no successor to Erdogan that I can see, and I don't think he's got a 10-year lifespan. I really don't.
Yeah, I have high hopes that someday Turkey will revert back away from a theocracy that Erdogan's trying to create. Really, and it's taken some pretty big steps to do that from a governmental perspective, and steps back towards the democracy level government that and society that we allowed to come into NATO. Because I don't think that we would have let them into NATO. They were like they are today, and I think they're part of the reason why NATO's existence is at risk, and for good reason, Still with me, Jake?
Absolutely. I'm sorry. Yeah. I thought you were waiting for another question. Yeah, I mean, Turkey reminds me a lot of like Iran. It's an amazing country with a lot of amazing things to offer. It just has lousy leadership right now. And Turkey is another one of those countries. There's a lot of countries like this, Turkey, Qatar, sometimes the Saudis, where they try to play both sides of the fence in the Arab Muslim world and then the rest of the world. And, you know, it's just getting frustrating already. People need to pick a side. And it seems like in the Arab world, they always, and in the Muslim world, they always wait too long to pick a side. Mm-hmm. And it really comes and crashes down on their head. You know, Jordan's a great example there. All Jordan had to do was wait out the Six-Day War and not attack Israel. We have the phone conversation on tape between the Prime Minister of Israel back in 67 telling then King Hussein, like, listen, we'll leave you alone. You're going to be able to keep control of the whole West Bank. Just don't attack us. Yeah. And they did anyway. And Jordan's been an irrelevant country ever since. There's a lot of Jordans out there. You know what I mean? And it's just, it's amazing how they keep blowing it in that region over and over.
Do you see the, you know, we've seen the UAE kind of flexing itself and responding into Iran and those kind of things. Do you see them as a rising potential larger power in the region?
Absolutely. I mean, they've made it clear. What's one of the most interesting developments of this war is that the UAE now has completely proven that it can be independent of Saudi Arabia. You know, when the UAE, for example, entered into the Abraham Accords, everyone knew that they had to get Saudi approval to do that first. I'm not so sure that the next thing the UAE does will require Saudi approval. I don't think the Saudis approved of them leaving OPEC. I don't think the Saudis approved of the UAE demanding all the Arab countries join them in declaring an official war against Iran just the other day. And the UAE feels very emboldened here. That's what victimhood does, you know, not to get into theological philosophy for a second here, but, you know, there's a lot of a lot of great thinkers in philosophy that believe that the real key to becoming a human and the real key to community is suffering. Once you've suffered, then you're a real human, which is why that whole Westworld thing, you know, the robots become real humans because they've suffered so much. But, you know, all joking aside, it's kind of like the labor pains analogy. But the UAE has taken the brunt of these hits from Iran during this entire war, and that has clearly made men of them in every sense of that word. I mean, actual humans and actual adults. And the UAE was already on that path. But absolutely, I think that, but they're not big enough, and they certainly don't have a huge military. But what they could become is the great new mouthpiece of the Arab world if some of these morons, and there's no other way to say it, they're just ethical morons in Syria and in Turkey and other people, allow themselves to just enjoy the ride. The amount of economic prosperity they could bring to themselves and their people, if they would just stop hating for a second, is immeasurable. But, you know, well, they've had these opportunities before and they've failed. So I'm not holding my breath. But it's great to see what UAE and Bahrain and some of those other countries are doing. But
that has always puzzled me. They have all this possibility and potential for economic prosperity for all their people. But they're constantly struggling and worried about the people that are kept down rising up and attacking whoever's controlling the government in each one of those countries, as a matter of fact. Something's not right there. We got to take our last break. When we come back, we'll shift to the Ukraine-Russia war, Jake. But they're linked, no matter what, because of China and Russia. The Iran war is now linked to the Ukraine-Russia war. So I'd be interested to get your thoughts on what's going on with that. We'll be right back, and we'll hear from Putin on the way back in.
Hello, I'm Brandon House. Would you like to gain access to over 20 years of my radio shows, TV shows, my books? I've written 15 books, and most of those books are ebooks now, and We have conference DVDs, conferences where we filmed our conferences at the Ozarks, literally starting 20 years ago. It's all available in our archived vault. All you have to do is go to worldviewtube.com/vault. worldviewtube.com/vault. And for a reasonable monthly fee, you gain access to over 20 years of Christian worldview programming, news, information, books, documentaries, and a powerful search engine. And folks, it's a great way not only to educate yourself, equip yourself, but it's a big way that you can help fund our continuation as a broadcast network. Please check it out. worldviewtube.com/vault, worldviewtube.com/vault, and help us continue pushing out a Christian worldview.
During the latest phone conversation with the President of the United States, President Trump, we spoke about May 9th, and he, I believe he spoke about it in very good terms. He remembered our common struggle against Nazism, and I said that I plan to declare May 8th and May 9th ceasefire. Why May 8th? Because that's when they celebrate the Victory Day in the West, and Ukraine also joined the West in this regard, so they consider May 8th the Victory Day. And President Trump supported it, and literally the next day we declared our intention. But as soon as we declared that, we received no reaction from anyone. And then day or two later, and probably in Kyiv, they thought and they realized that this step is supported by the U.S. administration. They thought that it would be beneficial for them to react to that. To react how? To agree to our proposal? They believed it was not to their advantage, so they came up with a different proposal to have a ceasefire in May 6th.
Welcome back to the Rob Manis Show. It's More War Monday. We have to be so serious here, but it's rare that I find a clip that's very recent of Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, that where he shows his sense of humor, and I knew he had one, and he did there a little bit in that clip at his press conference. I believe it was on May 9th. May 9th is the day that Russia celebrates Victory Day in Europe, and May 8th is the West Day, as he said there. My guest is Jake Novak. Jake, Mr. Putin has said some other things in the last few weeks, commenting that maybe Russia, you know, that he didn't say maybe, he said things, we could be looking at peace soon, something to that effect, and those kind of things. Is that realistic, though, considering what's happening today?
The one thing I noticed, and you didn't hear it in that clip, but when he said that things might be coming to an end, that was what he said. That's a direct translation from the Russian. I couldn't help but notice the resignation in his voice and in those words. It made me a little bit more optimistic that maybe we are looking at someone who's just tired of this now, who's seen whatever benefits he could get from it have long since passed. And he's looking at an opportunity now while Trump is still president, where he can maybe just put an end to this and not suffer any punitive damages from it, as if he were in a court case or something. There's a resignation in his voice. I think the guy could still stretch things out for a couple more years, but I don't feel like he's as determined to keep it going as he was before. It's amazing to me, though, and I mentioned this on my own program, not the one I did with you on Sunday, but earlier in the morning. You know, what happened to the whole world being so concerned about Ukraine and putting the Ukraine flag on their bumper stickers and putting it in their Facebook and X account profiles? I mean, you would have thought that that Putin saying something like this just a couple of years ago would have sent them all celebrating. Like, look, he's giving up. I mean, it's just amazing how much and I'm not even going to blame the left for this. This is just people who are into politics as a fad. The people who are faddish, you know, who with a D, you know, who look at these things like it's just some kind of cool thing, like as if they're rooting for a ball club one year and then they go to another team or they like a particular movie one summer and they just move on. You know, President Trump uses the 1 million word a lot when he talks about casualties from the war. I don't know if it's that big, but certainly several hundred thousand, right, have died in this war over 4 years. The fact that you have a guy resignedly saying it could be ending, that really should have been the number one story yesterday throughout the world. It wasn't, and that's an indictment of so many people, not just the left. I could just make fun of them, but so many people just who thought that this was the most important darn thing for so long, and they have a short attention span. By the way, those short attention spans, that's why people die in the world, because people move on and they don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, if we'd have had, you mentioned this earlier, if the world, the Allies had a short attention span in World War II, there'd probably still be some Nazi Germany and Empire of Japan type, militaristic types running around with power of some sort today, you know. The interesting thing with that clip and that whole press conference was that caught me is his body language. My instinct is that he and his team have already made the decision because he seemed relaxed in a way that usually go back and look at even the interview with Tucker Carlson where he's one-on-one with him. He was not, he's usually more of a government bureaucrat, but very, you know, here's the rules. We're going to follow the rules, you know, but in this clip, he seemed very relaxed, kind of had a sense of humor, almost as if they'd already made the decision to do this. And now the tension's no longer in his body. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You mentioned before we went to the break that these things are all intertwined and connected. Mm-hmm. The Iran war is possibly the off-ramp for Putin, isn't it? Putin can say, we will stop supporting Iran and meddling there, like we talked about last night. They're sending killer drones to Iran over the Caspian Sea, which is another route to get to them. Mm-hmm. And he now has the bargaining chip to say, if you don't punish us after we stop hostilities with Ukraine, if you don't seek to really make us pay reparations or for the further sanctions, then we'll stop meddling with Iran. And he got the off-ramp he needed here. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. You know, look, punishing Putin, I don't know if anyone will be able to do that necessarily. So it seems like it's a stretch to do that anyway. And frankly, if the Iranian oil comes back into the open market, like the Venezuelan oil comes back into the open market, Russia's oil, the value of its oil industry will be diluted anyway. So it doesn't feel like such a loss to us not to go after Biden-era punitive type stuff against Vladimir Putin. I just don't see it.
Yeah, and my instinct is just my instinct only. I have no evidence of it, but my instinct is that he and President Trump are talking in the background and have been talking in the background a bit from an economic perspective. He can't trust the president, so he's got to have some kind of leverage to try to get a deal that has something of value to the Russian people. It's something in the plus column. And this Iran war is a way to do it, but I think he's always been willing to listen to President Trump from an economic deal perspective as a way to get out of Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing he has to offer the Russian people is, you know, like that old saying, the one thing about hitting yourself on the head with a hammer is it feels great when you stop. So the Russian soldiers and young people who have been fighting in this war, the idea that they won't have to continue a draft or whatever they're doing to get the troops on the border into Ukraine, that ending, that's what he can provide to the Russian people. And again, just having a relief on that scale should be pretty nice.
It's interesting conversation today because, you know, you remember it wasn't long ago when the hand-wringing and gnashing of teeth and wailing about the Russians were going to come across Western Europe and take the continent was going on.
Yeah, I mean, what a ridiculous thing. Not that Russia doesn't have hostile intentions for us. I think they do. Putin does. But, you know, they've literally been bogged down in this thing in the Ukraine. Could they have done other things to win? Yeah, they could have. But honestly, we should continue to worry about Russia, but not on that wide scale. And really, the problem in Europe, as we people like us have been saying for a long time, is completely self-inflicted. Europe's destroying itself. They don't need Vladimir Putin to invade them. They opened the gates to be invaded, and they're an incredibly weak, and they've destroyed so much of their economic and military and certainly political power themselves. And Vladimir Putin didn't have to do one thing to help them to do
that. Yeah, and the evidence just doesn't hold up that they think that Russia is a threat capable of rolling over Western Europe like the Soviet Union was a threat, because a lot of them are still buying Russian oil and gas, including the Ukrainians. Diesel is refined in India, which is Russian oil and gas.
It's just insane. I mean, it's like a Rube Goldberg cartoon. It's the craziest thing. And again, one of the things I always say to far-left activists, whenever they say things like population reduction or get rid of gas, or I always say, you first. You kill Russia. And you first. Stop buying their oil. Oh, you're not willing to do that? Call me when you're willing to put your own money where your mouth is. And 9 times out of 10, that ends the argument right there. Simple as that.
It does. Well, let's finish this one up talking about your thoughts on NATO. What do you think? Is NATO still a viable alliance? Or are you like me where I think they lost viability when they went on the offense in various ways and areas and lost the moral high ground as a purely defensive alliance against the Soviet?
Well, most of our NATO allies don't have enough stability at home to be considered a reliable ally. You have a situation in Great Britain and France, and now to some extent in Germany, where it doesn't look like those governments have any stable control. And more importantly, Colonel, it doesn't look like there's a significant reform replacement movement in there. I know the Reform Party just won all these local elections in Great Britain, but I'm still not convinced that Nigel Farage, who I like a lot of the things he says, but I don't see him as someone who is capable of governing, and I don't really think he's all that interested in it. Do you? Because I don't. And
I'm not sure. I can't tell.
Yeah, at least he talks the talk. There's no one in France and Germany who even talks the talk. So the idea, I mean, this is, you know, so much of what we discuss, Colonel, whether it's like, for example, things like the two-state solution or is Iran, are we going to make peace with Iran? There are relevant conversations that we're having with ourselves because our enemies in this situation aren't interested in peace or an independent state or any of these things. We're having this conversation about the future of NATO while some of these major countries are completely unstable on their own. Forget about being able to fight in a foreign war with us. They're not even able to keep the peace in their own country. So talk about a first world problem. This is like first world prime point. This is like a point one world problem. Like we're talking about this while as if these countries really don't have enough on their plate right now that they could possibly put a, I mean, if Great Britain put all of its fighting males off to war somewhere, the idea that country could sustain, I mean, I think it would be overrun by the enemies within in a day. So they're not going to do that, Colonel. They're not going to do that. They can't take that risk. So, and that's another reason why they were big talkers about Ukraine. There was never a threat, in my opinion, of a significant European force joining the Ukrainian forces in the field because they can't spare them. It's as simple as that.
There you go. Well, thanks, Jake. I appreciate you joining me. Tell folks real quick where they can find the radio show. You can follow him at JakeJakeNY on X.
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a lot of shows on WABC Radio, which is a national, international radio station, the WABC Talk Radio 77 app. Not only can you listen live if you go on that app or that website, but you can get all the archive shows that I've done as well. Jake Novak, WABC, is all you need to type in your search engine. You'll get all of it.
All right, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Tomorrow, folks, Training Tuesday, the leading U.S. Senate candidate in Louisiana, Julia Letlow, will be with us. And it's going to be fire. So check it out. I'll see you then.
What if millions around the world could access Bible teaching and worldview training for free right now without hitting a paywall? That's exactly what happens every day at worldviewtube.com because of the Worldview Weekend Foundation. We don't lock our live stream behind PayPal. We don't restrict our content to members only. Instead, the Worldview Weekend Foundation helps cover the cost of delivering free educational and ministry programming to people across the nation and around the world. And it's not just programming. My Sunday night church service, where I taught verse by verse through Revelation for 18 months, and now I am teaching through the book of Daniel, is made possible through the support of our church, Worldview Weekend Foundation. If you believe this kind of truth-centered biblical teaching must continue, donate today. Go now to worldviewfoundation.com. You'll also find our mailing address and phone number there if you'd rather give by phone or mail. That's worldviewfoundation.com. Thank you.
News is moving faster than ever, and so are we. Worldview Tube brings you 24/7 live stream coverage and now real-time alerts when it matters most. Once you have the Worldview Tube app installed, exit the app and navigate your way to settings. In settings, locate the tab labeled Notifications. Select the Notifications tab. Scroll down until you locate the Worldview Tube app icon. Select the tab, and here you can turn on